Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Good morning. It is time to get up. And could it be closing time in Boston? What has to happen tonight for Steph and the Warriors to finish off the Celtics? And what would it mean for his legacy? Plus, we will tell you Boston's plan to get Jason Tatum back on track. Can he get it together and help save their season tonight? And what exactly does Lamar Jackson want? Our insider is in Baltimore, and he will tell you how much cash the Ravens quarterback is looking for. Welcome to Get Up. I am Dan Graziano in for Greeny here at the Seaport. I'm by myself here, but look at all my friends who are dialing in to help out today. Vince Carter and Brian Windhorst are here to talk hoops. Dominique Foxworth and Louis Riddick are here to break down all the football. Jeremy Fowler is going to join us from Baltimore, but we start on the ice with the game of the night. Lightning facing the Avalanche in game one of the Stanley Cup Final. Lightning going for their third straight Stanley Cup title. First period, the Avalanche are up 2-1. They have a two-man advantage. Mikko Rantanen takes a shot. Arturi Lehkonen redirects the puck in for the goal, and the Avalanche are up 3-1. Second period, same score. Nikita Kucherov with a great move around the defender and pass to Andre Palat for the goal. What a move. That cuts the lead to 1, and less than a minute later, Mikhail Sergachev gets the puck at the point, shoots and scores, hits both posts on the way in. 2 goals in 48 seconds. Lightning tie it at 3, and the game would go to overtime. Game 1 in overtime. What's better than that? In overtime, take a listen to what Sean McDonough had to say about the game winner.
Copper had his shot blocked by Hedman. Score! Burakovsky!
That is Andre Burakovsky with the game winner. Avalanche win 4-3 in overtime, take a 1-0 series lead, and here's what Burakovsky had to say about it.
This crowd is absolutely nuts right now. Like, yeah. What does it feel like to win for them?
These fans are amazing. They've been amazing the entire year for us. So, this is great. This is a dream for since I was a kid.
Colorado improved to 13-2 this postseason. That makes them just the fifth team in NHL history to start a single postseason by winning 13 of their first 15 games, and the previous four all went on to win the Cup. Thrilling game one in the Stanley Cup Finals last night, but now we turn our attention to the NBA, where game 6 of the finals is tonight in Boston. We're going to play a game of over-under. Vince Carter, start us off. Over-under for Klay Thompson tonight, 20.5 points. What do you got?
Dan, I'm gonna say 20. I feel like we're gonna see game six Klay. He's gonna be hot, but for some reason I'm just saying 20. So I'm gonna say under.
Maybe a low scoring game overall. Brian Windhorst, over under for Jason Tatum, 3.5 turnovers in this game. Which way are you leaning?
Yeah, well, considering he just broke the all-time record for most turnovers in the history of a playoff run, I'm going to have to say over. It doesn't necessarily mean the Celtics are going to lose, but I think that would be the smart bet.
Well, it certainly won't help, that's for sure. Vince, 4.5 threes for Steph Curry tonight. Over or under?
I'm going to go under, Dan, once again. I think the Boston Celtics want to keep him under control and at wraps, and if they're going to lose, they're going to lose to the others, and I say under at 4 made threes.
Well, they lost to the others in game 4, or in game 5. Curry had 43 points in game 4, just 16, though, in game 5, and he didn't make a single three-pointer. Obviously, incredibly unusual for the all-time leader in that category. After that game, his teammate Draymond Green talked about how Steph would bounce back from his 0-for-9 performance from 3.
He's going to keep shooting, and we're going to keep doing all that we can to get him shooting. So he was 0-for-9 from 3. He's going to be livid going into game 6, and that's exactly what we need.
All right, so Brian Windhorst, Vince Carter with us, as mentioned, to talk NBA. Brian, is that what you're expecting, a livid Steph Curry to come out and torch the Celtics tonight in a big bounce-back game?
There's so much respect for Steph, and he has inflicted so much damage to the Celtics in this series. I can tell you, in talking to both sides yesterday, it's not even a question of whether he's going to bounce back. It's just an assumption. And so I expect the Warriors to continue with their game plan, which is a lot of heavy Steph Curry pick and roll at the top of the key, letting him score on his own, create his own shot. It is incredible to watch what Steph has been able to do in this series. He is averaging 13 and a half points unassisted. That is like Shaquille O'Neal, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar level. We were used to seeing it decades ago, players doing it in the post. Steph does it at the top of the key. I expect him to do it again tonight, and I don't know if it's going to lead to a win, but I would expect Steph Curry to be great again.
Vince, how do you size up what you've seen from Steph so far and what you expect tonight?
You know, the word livid, I don't know. I think it's going to be super aggressive, and he's going to go out, like Wendy said, and just they're going to allow him to go out and get his, and he's going to make plays and draw the attention, and regardless of if it's that drop coverage or you know, one-on-one or he's double-teamed, he's going to make the right play. And I think an aggressive Steph Curry is going to open up opportunities for everyone because he's understand they're one game away for a lot of reasons, for things that he wants to accomplish, things that they want to accomplish. And doing it for some of the guys like Andrew Wiggins, who has been extremely solid for the Golden State Warriors. So, yes, he's going to come out and set the tone for the Golden State Warriors.
Brian, we were talking in the meeting earlier. You said you saw something different from Boston defensively against Steph in Game 5. Are they pretty much throwing everything they can at him and daring the other guys to beat them?
Yeah, they turned up their aggression level a little bit. They stepped more forward on him, picking him up. What's one of the reasons why he hoisted a couple of those 30-footers? Because instead of trying to meet him at 23 feet, they were meeting him at 25 feet, so he shot from 30. That's kind of the counterbalance that Steph has. And I think they were pretty pleased with the way it all worked out. They know he's not going to go 0 of 9 every game. And look, Andrew Wiggins has arguably had two of the most important and impressive games of his career these last two games. And he has definitely had space created for him by the attention to Steph. And I am in agreement with Vince. If the Celtics are going to lose this series because Andrew Wiggins has three brilliant games in a row, they would rather go down like that than let Steph put another 40 spot on them in their home building.
And Wiggins, of course, been brilliant. We've talked a lot about Steph. But Vince, I mean, look, tonight's game six, right? Game six, Clay. Are we expecting Clay Thompson to deliver one of those signature shooting performances tonight?
I do expect Clay to be in game six Clay mode because for Clay, just think, all of the injuries sitting there dreaming and wanting to get back to this opportunity, he's not going to let it slip. I believe in when he said, I can't wait to get back to Boston. Yeah, maybe it's a shot at Boston, but it's also this he's one game away from all of what has gone with him as far as injuries are concerned, now getting that opportunity to make a splash, if you would, for his teammates and to make things easier for Steph because we know they're going to put the attention on Steph to make others beat him. So why not game six, Clay?
Look, I mean, we look at this graphic right here. Slow start to the series, but he's picked it up here in the last three games. Brian, are you seeing good signs that encourage you about a potential big night for Clay?
Yeah, if you're a Warriors fan, you're getting kind of excited what you're seeing from Clay. He just really wasn't himself the first two and a half games of this series. Game five was his best game. Hit a couple of huge shots in the second half of that game. And just this postseason, when the Warriors have been able to close out both with the Grizzlies and then last round with the Mavericks, Clay scored over 30 points, shot over 50% in those closeout games. If the Warriors are going to win tonight, it's probably going to be because they get an excellent performance from Clay. And I have to say, the trend doesn't favor the Warriors here, not only because they're on the road, but in their first three road closeout games this postseason, they lost all three of them and gave up an average of 126 points. So they know they got to play better, and Clay knows he's got to be a big part of that.
Look, yeah, I mean, lots of experience, obviously, on the Golden State side in situations like this. But on the Boston side, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they continue to experience growing pains throughout these finals. In Game 5, the two of them combined for 9 turnovers, and they shot 2 for 9 in the fourth quarter. Those two discussed their mindset heading into Game 6. Here's what they had to say.
We are not scared. We do not fear. The Golden State Warriors, we want to come out and just play the best version of basketball. We know it's a good team over there. We know they've done it before.
I think having done it before, you know, should give you even more confidence that you can. Looking forward to being in front of the crowd, you know, knowing that they're going to be behind us and giving us that extra boost of energy as they have my whole career.
Look, Jason Tatum, he feels pretty good when he's facing elimination, averaging 31.7 points per game in the three elimination games the Celtics have played this postseason. That's the second most when facing elimination by a Celtics player in a single postseason all time. So plenty of evidence. Brian, you mentioned that the Warriors haven't been great in this situation this postseason. Celtics have been great in this situation this postseason. So what is their plan tonight to try and get Tatum back on track?
Yeah, and since they had a meeting before practice yesterday and they went over some things that they need to do. Number one, they've got to stop complaining about the officiating. It is, regardless of whether it's fair or not, it is getting them out of position. That includes Coach Ime Udoka, who got a technical foul. That was something that they addressed specifically before they went out for practice to get ready for this game. The other thing is they are making things a little bit too hard on themselves the way they're dribbling into traffic. So they are going to attempt to simplify their offense. I know that that sounds pretty basic at this point in the season, but instead of trying to create things on their own, they want to sort of use each other together instead of forcing it and therefore playing right into the Warriors' hands and creating turnovers. And the third thing is, Ime Udoka said this could be tough, but he might have to try to get Jason Tatum a little bit more rest during the game. It was pretty clear that he was on dead legs by the fourth quarter of Game 5. He has played almost 1,000 minutes in this postseason. He and Jaylen Brown both played over 44 minutes in Game 5. They need to try to protect those guys a little bit and give them some more energy late. So look for those changes and see if it'll be enough for Boston tonight to extend the series.
Yeah, Vince, I mean, look, the Celtics played two straight seven-game series prior to this one. Now they're just hoping this one becomes a seven-game series. What do you expect to see from the Celtics tonight?
Well, Dan, I'm going to work my way backwards off something Wendy said about minutes and getting him some rest. You know, Boston has to be careful now. You know, when you sit him, how long do you sit him? I know you find him rest, but how long do you sit him? You know, if things, you're stagnant offensively, no scoring or such, so on and so forth. So that's one question. But two, for me, for those two young guys, is I want them to be aggressive. I want them to get into the paint, work your way inside out, start downhill instead of starting outside, taking contested jump shots, and go from there. And number two, to help turn down some of those turnovers, stop seeking fouls. Stop trying to look for the fouls, because in the finals, they're not going to give you that call all the time. And I thought Jaylen Brown at some point, but for sure Jason Tatum, when he was struggling making shots, he was seeking bodies and trying to get fouls, not getting the call. Now he's off platform shooting those one-leg shots that has gotten him in trouble.
I'm so glad you said that, because I thought that frustrated me just because I'm an old man. But it's good to hear it from you. Vince, real quick, who wins tonight's game?
I still think Golden State has a lot of motivation, a lot of things going in their favor. They're feeling good about how they played. They think they stole one because Steph struggled. Draymond goes back to Boston to win, and so he can have a lot to say. And then, of course, Klay Thompson getting his opportunity to do what he does. And lastly, Steph Curry gets to play well, be the hero, and win his MVP.
All right, lots more on this game and this series as we continue here on Get Up this morning. When we come back, he is already a legend. We will talk about how a series-clinching win tonight would impact Steph Curry's legacy and his place in history. And on the NFL side, our insider is in Baltimore. He's got new details on Lamar's contract situation. We'll tell you how much money Lamar is looking for and why a deal isn't done yet.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Get Up is brought to you by Once Weekly Trulicity. Meanwhile, on planet Earth, the Dallas Cowboys finished up their minicamp practice and headed to Top Golf. There you go. Dak, Zeke. Dominique Foxworth, noted golf analyst. Which one of these guys has the best swing?
I mean, I'm going with Trayvon Diggs because he's a cornerback. I don't care about his swing, but they're the best athletes on any field at any time. So we go with that guy. Surprised he wasn't out there intercepting other people's drives because that's apparently all he knows how to do.
For the record, Dominique did not look at any of the swings. He just picked the guy who played the same position he did. It is now time to run the hurry up with our Jeremy Fowler, who's in Baltimore for us. Jeremy, start us in Pittsburgh with Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Dan, Fitzpatrick gets a long-term deal, and the Steelers break precedent. Typically, they wait till around training camp or August to do a big-time deal with a star player. But first-time GM Omar Khan, newly in this seat, said, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to do my splash move now. This is a deal they knew they were going to do for the better part of the last year. They simply did not wait. Now they have time to potentially do wide receiver Diontae Johnson, although that is going to be costly as well. Typically, they only do, you know, one big deal per summer, so we'll see. Let's go Terry McLaurin. I'm told that Washington has intensified their efforts to try to get a long-term deal done with him. He sat out minicamp. That sort of sparked more talks. They've been sort of upping their proposals, so to speak. Nothing imminent yet, but this could get done even this week. Definitely before training camp is Washington's plan. They value this guy in a big way. Think about this. He averages 1,000 yards a season over 3 years playing with 8 different quarterbacks, and not all of them great. Now let's switch to Lamar Jackson. Now, I'm told there's still no major momentum on a new contract. I spoke with somebody with the team here in Baltimore, and I was told that we're not sweating it right now. Lamar Jackson isn't sweating it right now. We're just happy he's here throwing passes in minicamp. I continue to hear Lamar Jackson has resolve here, holding out for the right deal. I've spoken to league execs who predict that he'll get at least $40 million per year. That's going to be his market as a former MVP with 37 regular season wins. Still unclear whether Baltimore will cover that.
So, Jeremy, what are you hearing in terms of sort of where the disagreement lies here and why things haven't been able to – I mean, they've been talking since last offseason. Why haven't they been able to get to a deal?
Yeah, Dan, my sense is that it's not that there's a hard disagreement. They really haven't had extended talks. It's been talks with Lamar here or there, trying to piece things together. The Ravens have been pretty vocal that they want to have more extended sit-downs with Lamar, but really they do know, from what I'm told, where each other stands. And it's my understanding that if he's going to get up to that Josh Allen range or higher, let's say $43 million per year, I just don't know from what I'm hearing if the Ravens have been there yet, kind of slow playing this thing, but that's what a negotiation's about. And they have 6 weeks right now with some urgency to try to bridge this gap before training camp. And if they don't get it done, I'm told the Ravens are unafraid to use that franchise tag in 2023.
Sure. If 2023, 2024, they could use it as well. It should be a while before they worry about Lamar leaving. But Dominique, when you hear those numbers, right, Josh Allen, $43 million a year, he's never won MVP. Lamar has. I mean, should Lamar be asking to be the highest paid quarterback given where the market is?
I mean, I absolutely think so. That tends to be the trend that we go with. Why would we stop it now? It's like the next quarterback that is up gets the highest deal, even if it's not someone who's been as successful as Lamar. It's really hard to argue that he doesn't deserve it, considering that over the past 3 years, I think Patrick Mahomes is the only quarterback with a better QBR. And I don't think you can argue that anyone means more to a specific team, a specific city, than Lamar Jackson. And when he came in that rookie year, he saved a lot of jobs. There's a lot of people in the building that are still getting Baltimore Ravens checks because Lamar Jackson showed the hell up and showed the hell out. So I can't understand any argument that says that Lamar Jackson does not deserve to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. Unless that's something that he's not looking for, then it should be up to him. It's not necessarily up to the team, because I'm not sure who they're going to turn to.
Well, a big part of this story has been that we don't seem to have anybody that has a sense of exactly what Lamar wants, right? He doesn't have an agent. It's an unorthodox negotiation. Lewis, he showed up for mandatory minicamp. It seems like he'll show up for training camp. How would you play this if you were Lamar, still with the contract not done?
Look, Dan, I've said all along, look, I was of the belief that he shouldn't do anything. And look, if he wanted to show up for minicamp, fine, but I would be very, very reluctant to step on the football field and do anything, you know, substantial at the risk of, you know, suffering some kind of injury that would impair my ability to continue to play going forward. Now, obviously, he can have insurance protection that would protect him against catastrophic injury. But look, I think, look, the one thing we have said numerous different times on various different shows is that the one avenue that players always have in terms of contract negotiation to kind of tilt leverage in their favor is to withhold services. And look, with Lamar, we know for sure that timing is on his side and leverage is on his side, simply because, one, Deshaun Watson signed that ridiculous deal in Cleveland, and you can't get around it. You can't ignore it. Steve Bisciotti already said, man, it probably wasn't a good time for that deal to be struck, because he knew that this deal was coming up. And leverage. Everyone knows the effect that Lamar has on this offense in terms of points per game, upwards of near 30 when he starts, and the percentage of games that they win when he starts, which is above 70. That's timing and leverage working in his favor. So look, man, I would be really reluctant to step on the football field until I had a long-term deal. We'll see what his strategy is going to be.
What do you think, Dominique? Learned from the Deshaun Watson. Yeah. They should have learned from the Deshaun Watson thing, is that the price isn't going to go down. Like, the next person who signs a big deal is only going to make the price go up. So in my view, when you have a guy that you know is the guy, understand, like, last year with Baker Mayfield, you're not sure, so you slow play it. When you got a guy that you know is your quarterback for as long as he wants to be, which Lamar Jackson has shown, he's not going to get beat out anytime soon. You lock him up as soon as possible, and then that gives your cap more flexibility, more than less.
If you were,
and I'll add, if we're talking leverage
Lamar
here.
Jackson.
Yeah, hang on. Lewis, real quick, what do you got?
Yeah, I was just going to say this, and I said this numerous times. I've heard other people say this, too. If you're Lamar Jackson and you're looking at Deshaun Watson's deal, why in the hell would you ever say, I will accept less than what he got? Right. Why would you say that? I mean, why would you say, I'm going to accept less? I'm just going to take less. Look, it's not my – I didn't negotiate the deal. I wasn't the one who put it out there. If you're if you're Lamar, tell Steve Bisciotti, hey, go talk to the people in Cleveland about why they signed him to that deal. I'm an MVP for you. You built this entire team around me, let alone just the offense. And we know what the numbers say in terms of my effect on this football team, in terms of points scored and how many wins we get. It's as simple as that.
Jeremy, put a bow on it for us.
Hey, if we're talking leverage here, if the Ravens don't acquiesce with that big number, think about the quarterbacks that have gone on the franchise tag. Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott, not as accomplished, huge contracts after playing out their deal. Imagine if Lamar Jackson, a former MVP, got through the franchise tag. He'd get whatever he wants.
Lots more on this as we continue, and we might hear from Lamar today there at Ravens practice. We come back on Get Up. Is Tampa Tom's appetite almost gone? Why does he keep talking about retirement? Does he have one foot in and one foot out? We will discuss Tom Brady. But first, the battle scars Steph Curry and the Warriors take with them to Game 6. Brian Windhorst will tell you exactly why Golden State is locked in on wrapping up the series tonight.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Back on Get Up, in case you haven't heard, Steph Curry can add to his legacy tonight. He is already one of four players in NBA history with multiple MVPs, rings, and scoring titles. The others are Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Wilt Chamberlain, so that's good company. In the biggest moments, Curry has been money. He has 13 30-point games in the NBA Finals. That is tied with Kobe Bryant for the fourth most since the NBA-ABA merger in 1976-77. But he is still chasing that elusive Finals MVP award. Curry has 3,536 career points entering Game 6. That's the fourth most points in NBA playoff history by anyone who doesn't have a Finals MVP. So, Game 6 tonight, we have the possibility that the Warriors win the game and the series tonight. They know this. They've been here before. They've been in every possible position, it seems, in the playoffs. Brian, what does their past experience tell you about Golden State's mindset going into this game?
Well, look, they have an incredibly decorated last decade, especially the core players on this team. But the mark that is on their record that will never be erased is when they lost the 3-1 lead to the Cavs in 2016. I'm sure every time they see the numbers 3-1 together, a little shiver goes up their spine. So they get a victory in this game tonight. They don't have to hear about any of that. This goes back to Game 7. Then you start thinking, like, there's no way they could blow two leads in the finals in their history. And I'm telling you, you do not want that on your mind going into that situation. So I definitely think the Warriors are motivated to avoid even having to worry about that going into a potential Game 7 on Sunday.
If they do win it tonight, if they use that motivation, they finish him off tonight, Vince, what does that mean? What if they win tonight and he's the MVP, which I would imagine he would be if he has a big game and they win tonight, what does that mean for Curry's legacy for you?
I mean, I think it'll mean everything to him. I still think his legacy is solidified. It just opens that next elite door for Steph Curry that a lot of us can't talk about or don't know about. I mean, there's just a few people when he opens that next door, there only will be a few people in that room. So I think what the MVP does for him is, yes, he has that, his shelf is complete, but he gets the key, that special key to go to the next room that we all have no clue where that door is. So for him, it's winning the championship is a great accomplishment. And I think it's a great accomplishment for their team after what they've been through the last couple of years. But for Steph alone, I mean, let's just be clear. We can say, oh, he wants to win a championship. He wants that MVP. And you can see how he's come out and played in these finals. And you will see that tonight.
Our viewers may have noticed Dominique Foxworth joining in for this basketball discussion. Not just a random decision. Dominique once worked for the NBA Players Association, has a little bit of a connection to the game in addition to his NFL experience. Dominique, watching this series and Steph Curry, how do you size this all up tonight?
First of all, Dan, you ain't got to explain to the people why I'm here. I'm here because I want to be here. I love basketball just like the rest of y'all. No, I think Steph's performance tonight is going to change the way a lot of us who are around the game, talking about the game, feel about him. But in actuality, I don't think it changes anything about his legacy. Like, we already understand where he is on the Mount Rushmore, maybe not on the Mount Rushmore, but on the list of all-time NBA greats. And we understand that he's going to be the face of, like, the modern game, even though it was really just, like, modern math, or actually simple math that changed the game for us to understand that threes are more than twos. But he's the guy who really got us all to believe and understand that a little guard like that can be someone that you can build a team around. You don't have to look for the, like, unicorn type players like LeBron James. So I think he's given a lot of us hope going forward. Not old people like me, but young guys can believe that they can be the centerpiece and their gravity can affect the team. But no matter what he does, I think it's still LeBron's decade or LeBron's generation. That's just the way it's going to be. There's no game that he can have that's going to have us look back on these past 20 years and think that it was more about Steph than LeBron.
Fair enough, but
LeBron, he deserves to be in that conversation.
Absolutely.
He deserves to be in that conversation. And the reason why I said Steph has stretched the game, and I mean stretched the game, is with the shooting. Yeah, you know, before him, there were guys shooting it, not as this consistent, but he stretched the game where you see more guys shooting from distance, you know, with a nice percentage to add to that. And the way you guard defenses, you know, coming in as a young pup, we were taught to run to the to the paint first and build your way out. Now you're seeing run to the top of the three-point line and build your way out because of guys like Steph, like Trae Young, like Dame Lillard. So I think he's continued to stretch the game, and he deserves to be in that conversation. Not saying that he's better than LeBron in this era, but he deserves to be in the conversation when you talk about it.
Wendy, when you win a title, you don't care whether it's home or on the road, but what do you think it would mean if Steph wins tonight in Boston?
Well, he declared himself yesterday the Petty King. If he takes the Bill Russell Trophy in Boston and raises it tonight, that'll be true.
That would be the ultimate in pettiness. We're going to continue to talk about Game 6 all throughout today's show, but the game is actually tonight at 9 Eastern on ABC, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN Radio. Warriors trying to win their fourth title in 8 years. Our coverage tips with Greeny and the NBA Countdown crew at 8:30 Eastern. Now we got this morning's wake-up call. Let's take a listen to Connor McGehee on the call for Altitude Sports Radio as the Avalanche score an overtime game winner to win Game 1.
Another bouncing puck, gobbled up by JT Compher. Down the middle, Compher holds, shoots, it's blocked. Nichushkin with it, Burakovsky, he scores! Andre with a giant goal! And you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here because this party is over.
Very little in sports as exciting as overtime playoff hockey, as our NHL analyst AJ Molesko knows well. AJ, kind enough to join us this morning. What did you make of the game? Well, break down the game winner for us, first of all.
First of all, how fantastic for all hockey fans that we have game one go to overtime. Great hockey start to finish. These teams are both just wagons, and it's amazing. But the game winner, uncharacteristic giveaway there by Sergachev for the defenseman for Tampa Bay. And you just look at the five white jerseys. They've got numbers back, but they don't know who to pick up. They're running around a little bit. Palat, who's had such a phenomenal postseason, is such a big part of their team. They're back, but they're running around a little bit, and it makes it really difficult for Vasilevskiy, who did rebound after a challenging first period where he gave up three goals, two of which I'm certain he wants back. But that game winner, that was a great job by Colorado. Jump on the momentum that they were trying to build. They're at home. It's a big win for them.
Look, this Tampa team, AJ, as anyone who's faced them in this postseason knows, you can't let them off the mat, right? I mean, Colorado's up 3-1. They come back and tie it. So how huge was it, do you think, for the Avalanche to get game one at home?
Well, I think the win for Colorado was far more critical than the loss will end up being for Tampa Bay. And what I mean by that is Tampa Bay has the experience. They're the two-time cup winner. They've got guys on this team that are unflappable. They don't panic. Them losing on the road game one, they lost game one against Toronto. They lost game one against New York in round one and round three. So for them, they circle back. They get back to work. There's no panic with Vasilevskiy with his first period performance. But I think for Colorado, they're at home. They've had a 9-day layoff. They're the favorite. It only took 14 games for them to reach the final in their 12 wins. Now they have 13 wins. So for them, this is absolutely enormous. They now have 2 days off. They get to come back to this building that was just electric for game one. And I expect it to be the same for game two as they face off again on Saturday night. So I think that win, had they given up that overtime and lost, it would have been a much tougher thing for them to overcome.
So based on what you saw last night and what you've seen so far in the postseason, Tampa's going for their third title in a row. Colorado's been the best team all along. How do you project the rest of this series?
I mean, how can it not go to game seven? And maybe that's wishful thinking, because as a hockey fan, I just want more of this. I think every game's going to be a one-goal game. I think we're going to see more overtime. These teams have it all. They've got great defensemen that engage, that jump in the play, that are very active. They've got goal scorers. They've got experience. They've got speed. And, man, was the speed for Colorado on display, especially in the first period with their forecheck. So I hope it goes to game seven, but I honestly can't imagine a sweep here at this point. I know Colorado's a phenomenal team, but I think Tampa Bay, they do really well off losses, notwithstanding the two back-to-back losses against New York in the conference final. But it's going to be a great series. Buckle up.
Again, two-time defending champs. You can't understate how important that is for a team's chances in moments like this. Thanks, AJ. Much more from you as this series rolls along. And roll along it does. Saturday night with Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. Avs up 1-0 after their thrilling win over the Lightning last night. Our coverage will begin at 8 Eastern on ABC and ESPN+.
50-50, honoring 50 years of Title IX and the women moving the world forward.
One of the things we really focus on, that we're focusing in on, is whose responsibility is it to tell this history, to bring this history forward? You should want to know whose shoulders you stand on. You should want to know that somebody, young girls like we were, had the same dreams that you had. I love to talk about the fact that what we passed on as recipients of Title IX transcends sports.
When we come back, he is Game 6, Klay, for a reason. But do the Warriors need another epic performance from Klay Thompson tonight to win a championship? Richard Jefferson's going to come by and talk about it with us. And could it get worse for Justin Fields and the Bears before it gets better? I'll tell you what the Bears' second-year quarterback had to say that has our analysts sounding the alarm.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
You know what that means? It means Dominique Foxworth is here, and it's time for Answer the Question, where Dominique has to answer the hard-hitting questions. Dominique, we're going to keep this to football questions, even though you're an NBA analyst for us now. So hopefully that's not you can readjust back to football. First question, will Patrick Mahomes have a better season this year without Tyreek Hill?
No, not statistically. I don't see that happening. It's as great as Patrick Mahomes is, Tyreek Hill is a special player that we can watch that right there. 70-yard touchdown off of a 15-yard pass. It's really nice to be able to have someone that you know you can get him a short pass, he'll make it a big play. Or someone that you know when you're in trouble, he's fast enough to run down any pass that you can throw. That guy's no longer on that roster. It's going to make it more difficult for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, all right. Well, that was an easy one to get you started. This one's a little tougher. Who will be this season's Cincinnati Bengals, meaning the team that could potentially surprise everybody and land in the Super Bowl?
This is much harder, but I'm going to go with the Jaguars. I think that the point of being a Cincinnati Bengals is not just from going worst to first, it's that it also has to be a bit of a surprise. So, I could pick the Ravens because they were the worst in their division last year, but they had a lot of injuries and things like that. But the Jaguars do, like the Bengals, have a young, very talented quarterback, and they've addressed some offensive line issues, which we know makes life easier for that quarterback. And they brought in Trevon Walker to help with that defensive line pressure. So I'm not sure that they will do it, but if you look around that division, I think the Colts are a very, very talented team. We'll see what happens when Matt Ryan gets there, but it's not a division that has a bunch of juggernauts. I think the Titans have taken a step back, and I don't think that the Texans are really trying that much this year. So I think it's possible. It's a long shot, but it's possible that the Jags could have a sneaky win in that division.
That would be a surprise Super Bowl team to a lot of people for sure. One more. Look, we know Tom Brady's back in Tampa Bay. So far, Rob Gronkowski is not. Whether he will be or not remains a mystery. Can Tom Brady win the Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski?
Absolutely. I mean, he's done it before. And I think Rob Gronkowski is a nice piece to have, but he's not the young Rob Gronkowski that he was before. He's pretty reliable target for him. But is it Edelman talking about maybe he's coming back? He'll find a way. It does not seem like going to the Bucs is going to be, or playing with Tom Brady is going to be a hard hole to fill. They'll find people to fill in around Tom Brady. Hell, Dan, you get in shape. He might win you a ring. Get healthy. Play that slot receiver. What do you think about that? No?
That is far less likely even than the Jaguars playing in the Super Bowl. So we won't even need to get into that. It's not even worth our time to break down that possibility. That was answer the question. But Lewis Riddick wants to play a game too, and this one's called Right or Wrong. I'm going to make a statement, and Lewis, you're going to tell me if that statement is right or wrong. First one, the Green Bay Packers are a lock to win their division.
Look, I think that's wrong. Look, I think you have, and simply because of the fact that the Minnesota Vikings are going to be a football team that's going to be tough to contend with. So it's not so much about the fact that Aaron Rodgers lost Davante Adams and that we just don't know how the perimeter weapons are going to shake out. I think Minnesota is going to be formidable. You hear Kirk Cousins talking about the fact that him and Kevin O'Connell and this team overall feel really good about how things went this past spring, and they've got some good players, so I don't think it's a lock at all.
All right, how about this one then? Baker Mayfield is done as an NFL starting quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's, it's too hard to say. So I think that's wrong. I think there could always be the possibility that there's a team that because of injury needs someone who has Baker, who wants Baker Mayfield's resume, which quite honestly was much better earlier in his career than it has been recently. And that could always come to fruition this year, provided that the Browns go ahead and trade him or let him go and let him become a free agent.
All right, so I'm 0 for 2 here. How about this one? The Chicago Bears will be the worst team in the NFL this year.
Unfortunately, I think you may be right here. So I'm going to go right, and I think it's because of this. Look, I know Justin Fields made the comments that he made about them not being ready to play right now, but it just sounds like this is a guy whose head is swimming offensively to grasp what Luke Getsy, their offensive coordinator, is trying to implement. And on top of it, from a personnel perspective, the offensive line, I have a lot of questions about, particularly at the tackle positions with Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum. I don't know if they've given, you know, if they've given Justin enough weaponry out on the perimeter to go along with Darnell Mooney. And defensively, they are just devoid of talent, man. And if Robert Quinn is not there, and he's a guy who continues to hold out, man, it could be an ugly season in Chicago.
Yeah, it definitely has a rebuilding feel to it, right? New head coach, new GM, new offensive coordinator. You mentioned those comments by Justin Fields earlier this week. We want to play them for you. Earlier this week, he was asked, would they be ready if the season started right now? This is what he had to say.
No. Not ready for the season to start. You know, I'm the type of guy to, you know, like to know that I'm prepared, so right now, I'm just being honest, we're not ready to play a game right now. So, and when that time comes, we will be ready. So right now, no, I'm not ready to play a game.
Dominique, your thoughts on young Justin Fields' answer there?
I mean, it seems like an obvious answer. No one is ready to play right now. We haven't even started training camp. But I could imagine that this is going to be one of those things like when Justin Fields last year in the preseason said that the game felt slow to him. This is one of those things that is probably going to hang over him and people are going to use against him. But the fact of the matter is, no one's ready. We're not even in training camp. Leave that man alone. He's just trying to get ready to get a little bit better. And of course, he needs to learn that sometimes you got to lie to us. We don't want the truth all the time because we're going to find ways to pick at you if you're a little too honest, which he was right there.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any problem with the comments, right? He's being honest. Like, you're not supposed to be ready to play in the middle of June. Lewis, what did you think?
Look, I mean, I get what you're saying, that no one's ready to play a football game right now because your mindset's not really geared towards that. But I'm going to go a little deeper on this. Look, I think there's a huge learning curve for him. He's learning a whole new offense again. All right, and this to me sounds like someone who's saying, hey, look, I have a lot of things I'm trying to really right now download into my brain so I can play a little bit faster and play with more confidence this year and make that huge second-year leap. And I'm not ready right now. Come September, of course he's going to say, yeah, I'll be ready then. Well, we'll see. We'll see how ready they are. And I don't think this is just about Justin. Look, I know he's not really talking about this, but this football team around him, you tell me how they got better offensively to the point where he will then be able to just let his athletic ability shine. I don't see it, man. I don't see it, and I hate that for him. I hate it for him, but I think this is going to be, as you said, Dan, this could be an ugly year for Chicago. I just really think it could be.
Well, we'll see if Justin Fields has what it takes to overcome the adversity in front of him in year two. But, guys, hang on. I got to do a baseball highlight because the Houston Astros did something pretty cool yesterday. Taking on the Texas Rangers, you see Luis Garcia on the mound for the Astros. This is the second inning. First batter, Nathaniel Lowe. First pitch, bunts foul. Follow along here. Second pitch also fouled off. And on the third pitch, Garcia gets him swinging. That's one out on three pitches, three strikes. Ezekiel Durand up next. First pitch, strike one. Second pitch catches him chasing. Third pitch gets him swinging at the slider. That's six pitches, six strikes, two outs. Brad Miller to the plate next. First pitch fouled off. Second pitch fouled off. Third pitch, Miller out swinging. Garcia with the very rare, immaculate inning. Nine pitches, nine strikes, three strikeouts. Very rare. Surely it couldn't happen again in the same game by the same team. Bottom of the seventh, Phil Maton on the mound for the Astros now. Lowe again leading off. Swing and a miss, foul tip for strike three. That's Lowe again down on three pitches. Durand up again next. First pitch called strike, second pitch fouled off, third pitch called strike. Another three-pitch strikeout. That's six strikes, six pitches for Maton. And then we have Miller in the same situation as before. Yeah, you got it. Swing and a miss, swing and a miss, swing and a miss. Nine pitches, nine strikes, three strikeouts again. This time it's Maton making the history. First day in recorded Major League Baseball history, two immaculate innings have happened on the same day, let alone by the same team against the same batters. And after yesterday's historic pitching performance, the Astros now have nine of the 106 recorded immaculate innings, tied with the Dodgers and Yankees for the most that we know about all time. Thank you for nerding out on baseball with me this morning. Coming up, it's back to Boston for Steph Curry. What does he need to do tonight for the Warriors to win another championship? Richard Jefferson is going to tell us when we come back.